the fact is,
this is why we love Bell Hooks.
You know, this is something that's been on my mind lately, and it's been disturbing me, is that if feminism is all things to all people, then what is it? I mean, how do we locate it as a radical political movement in our lives?
For my podcast, I decided to focus on the writing of Bell Hooks, who centered her literary work around the idea of intersectionality. Intersectionality, a term coined by Kimberly Crenshaw, is the idea that different forms of violence, such as sexism, ableism, racism, can work in tandem to oppress certain individuals, creating disparities in experience. I thought this would be an interesting female thinker to highlight due to the shifts we're currently seeing in modern-day feminism. Through the infinite power of social media, the experiences of marginalized women have been amplified, and intersectionality is finally being discussed as a primary concern of the movement. While earlier first-wave feminism may have severely excluded Black women, I believe we're starting to see a kind of revolution in which Black women are able to tell their stories and experiences. And I think Bell Hooks has been a significant catalyst in allowing this discourse to happen. So, Gloria Jean Watkins, who later published work under the pseudonym Bell Hooks, was born on September 25th, 1952, in a segregated area of Hopkinsville, Kentucky. From a young age, Watkins knew she wanted to be a writer. She was curious and outspoken, continuously questioning her experiences and surroundings. While many may think that having a bright child would be desired by any parent, her father did not approve of her defiant nature. He actively attempted to stifle her and her creativity, once saying that she was too rowdy for a girl and needed to be subdued. Watkins recounts several instances of physical abuse towards both her and her powerless mother, which unarguably impacted her writing later on in life. In addition to the violence Watkins experienced within her childhood home, she began observing the violence of racism exerted within her own elementary school. Within her memoir, Bone Black, Hooks depicts noticing how school bus drivers in Kentucky would refuse to stop for the Black children who were walking to school in the rain. In another instance, she remembers being told what the flesh-colored crayon looks like, a light-toned peach. This clearly was not her flesh-colored crayon. These small occurrences within her early life made Hooks hyper-aware of the racism and sexism rampant within society, and the ways in which both of these forms of violence aided in the hardships of Black women. Both the gendered violence Watkins witnessed in her home, coupled with the racism she experienced, eventually led her to seek shelter within her own writing. She utilized her writing as a form of resistance, a method of understanding and theorizing the obstacles she faced. In doing so, she decided to publish under the name Bell Hooks. This name actually belonged to her great-grandmother, Bell Blair Hooks. The original Bell Hooks inspired Watkins, who says her great-grandmother retained a fiery, dominant personality she greatly admired. Watkins wanted to emanate that spirit of defiance within her writing, but chose to make her name lowercase as she didn't want her name to distract from her message. In many ways, the writer, Bell Hooks, resembled a rebellion against what society expected from Gloria Watkins. While Gloria was assumed to be a polite Southern girl, Bell Hooks possessed the ability to reject these gendered norms and have the liberty to be fearlessly unapologetic within her writing. Regardless of the hardships she endured early in her life, Watkins was extremely intelligent, eventually pursuing a bachelor in English literature at Stanford, followed by a PhD at the University of California, Santa Cruz. While she was pursuing her education, she began researching and writing her first book, Ain't I a Woman, all at the age of 19. She aspired to disrupt the assumption that only white women were capable of theorizing about Black women's experiences. Using her own personal knowledge, Bell Hooks embarked on a journey to bring intersectionality and women of color to the forefront of the feminist movement. While Bell Hooks published several notable books and memoirs, within this podcast, I intend to focus on her first writing, Ain't I a Woman, as well as Sisterhood, Political Solidarity for Women. Within her first published book, Anti-Woman, Hooks discusses the link between slavery and the modern devaluation of the Black woman within society. Her writing weaves a tale, beginning with the Black female slave experience and ending with an explanation as to why the consistent exclusion of marginalized women prevents them from claiming the title of feminist. Surprisingly enough, Hooks actually spends a considerable amount of time mapping out the ways in which Black men upheld the devaluation of Black women. She references how during the civil rights movement, Black women were protesting right alongside Black men, yet were never given the same level of recognition as famous Black male activists. I thought this was an interesting point, as the only female activist I personally ever learned about was Rosa Parks. Hooks actually argues that in some instances, the liberation of Black men required Black women to stay in their subservient position in order to support them. Thus, Black men actually reinforced harmful norms, rather than radically rejecting them. Hooks scrutinizes Black men further by reflecting on the historical gendered relations between slaves and white owners. She notes how many scholars assert that slavery stripped Black men of their masculinity, as they were frequently castrated and lynched. While these are horrible events and experiences, she argues that they were not in fact an act of demasculinization. The only thing Black men lost were their dominant patriarchal roles within society. In Africa, Black men were at the top of the hierarchy, but when they came to America, slavery demoted them below white men, but not below Black women. Slave owners actually reaffirmed Black male masculinity, Hooks argues, by using their assumed strength and aggressiveness to perform forced labor. Rather, it was Black women who lost their femininity by being forced to work alongside the men. This loss stems from the fact that gender norms correlate physical strength with masculinity. Black women being given the same standard of work basically insinuated that slave owners believed they were manly enough to adequately do the job. It was a weird dichotomy for Black women during slavery because, in addition to being masculinized, they were simultaneously used as sexual objects by their owners. Hooks references the rapes endured by Black women, which she argues aided in their devaluation within society. This is due to the culture of valuing women in accordance with their virginity and sexual modesty. Thus, Black survivors of rape during the slavery era were rejected by broader society, seeing as engaging in sexual activity, even if it was unconsensual, equated a loss of morality. Following the abolishment of slavery, Hooks stipulates that Black women basked in the freedom of being able to choose their sexual partner. This enjoyment of freedom sometimes meant Black women would take on multiple partners, which in turn was mocked by white women and used as evidence for Black bestiality. The culmination of both the masculinized role of Black women created through slavery, in addition to their sexual promiscuity, led white women to reject Black women from womanhood. I know that's a lot of references to women, but bear with me. In a nutshell, Black women seemingly did not fit the criteria of soft, delicate, and modest, which were all traditional feminine qualities, and therefore were deemed as illegitimate by white women. This rejection filtered into the feminist movement and is apparent when viewing feminist literature. Scholarly articles commonly only reference white women, and Hooks states that Black feminist writers are largely ignored within gender studies courses. She argues that Black women who fought for their liberation were continuously positioned as fighting for their Blackness, even if they were also fighting for women's rights. A great example of this was the Professor June Sochin's description of Mary Church Terrell, the first African-American woman to earn a college degree. Her description stated that Terrell was a Black abolitionist, and while this may be true, her article completely negated the fact that Terrell was also a suffragette. This negation of her feminist identity directly upholds what bell hooks claimed was the problem. Black women had to choose between either their racial identity or their womanhood, as these identities were rarely allowed to exist within the same space. This separation between Black women and the feminist movement is further explored within Hooks' book called Sisterhood, Political Solidarity for Women. The book aims to address and dissect this gap, as well as offer solutions to hopefully fix the lack of Black women within feminism. Hooks begins by stating that the struggle between white women and women of color still exists, and that this fight ultimately is not conducive to solving the issue of an oppressive patriarchal society. The male supremacist ideology, as she states, encourages women to believe our value is instilled in our relations to men, may it be through marriage, relationships, etc. This framework positions women as natural enemies, instead of encouraging us to engage in an inclusive sisterhood. This sisterhood must not rely on the idea of a common narrative, which positions women solely as victims. This gives the impression that the only bonding women can partake in is through collective trauma. We're depicted as fragile, weak, and innately unable to inflict violence on others. This is actually extremely harmful as it allows feminism to exclude those who may be assertive and aggressive. Side note, this is a pertinent connection to bell hooks' first book, which depicted how Black women were deemed non-female by white women due to this defiant nature. She argues this feeds into a feminist movement fueled by exclusion rather than collectiveness. Furthermore, this idea of women solely being victims positions men as the one and only perpetrators of gendered violence. Now, don't get me wrong, violent crimes do happen at the hands of men, but this framing of them as inherently evil isn't helpful in bringing about a feminist movement fueled in collective unity. By constantly saying men are the enemy, one abdicates women of having to reflect on their own internalized misogyny. Women can also be the perpetrators of violence or be an extension of harmful patriarchal beliefs. The movement just hyper-focuses on men being the sole issue. Ultimately, a sisterhood which ignores the multidimensionality of the female experience is not actually helpful in achieving equality. It allows for women to exclude those who do not fit the ideal of what a feminist is, which has some serious ties to racism. It also allows for us to devalue stay-at-home moms and women who choose to shave because we believe that they are essentially bad feminists who don't belong in the sisterhood. Instead of doing this, bell hooks urges us to embrace the diversity of experiences women face. She urges us to gather around for the purpose of liberating all women, rather than gathering in offense towards a common enemy. Her theory is radical in that it rejects the notion that feminists must act a certain way or hate all men. Ironically, by acknowledging differences, we forge a better understanding of a collective unity that addresses disparities within our experiences. Both works I've discussed serve as a radical call to Black women to enter the feminist arena and to fight for a more inclusive future that validates all women, regardless of class, gender, or race. She addresses the fact that women of color are rightfully hesitant. For most of history, they were intentionally alienated from the feminist movement. Yet, bell hooks still condemns their resistance to join, stating that their voices are needed in raising female consciousness. Her work is unforgiving, but serves as a much-needed reminder of the importance in recognizing the experiences of marginalized women. Their voices need to be prioritized within the conversation, or else true intersectional feminism will never exist. As I've continuously emphasized throughout this episode, bell hooks has undeniably aided in the progression of intersectional feminism within society. The term was introduced relatively recently, in 1989, but has emerged as a priority for the movement. Many now believe that you simply can't be a feminist if you don't participate in intersectional feminism. Prior to the late 90s, white, middle-class women were framed as a general blueprint for the struggles of women. This can be seen within Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, in which women's liberation is positioned in accordance with the white, middle-class experience. Many of her solutions simply aren't realistic for women of color, especially in impoverished areas. How can one participate in the workplace if they're continuously excluded due to systemic racism? These questions were left unanswered for many years, until writers such as bell hooks emerged, possessing the ability to share the story of women of color. Hooks' rejection of this homogenous feminist narrative, which solely stems from the experiences of white women, reminded me of Mary Wollstonecraft's emphasis on middle-class women. Wollstonecraft specifically curated her writing for middle-class women because she believed they were most apt at undertaking the fight for gender equality. While I understand her strategy, I wonder if this favoring within feminist literature ultimately caused the exact problem bell hooks is arguing against. Even if middle-class women were most ready to fight against the patriarchy, the constant centering of their perspectives made it seem as though white, middle-class issues affected all women equally. This is really the crux of bell hooks' contributions to the feminist movement. The reality, as she describes, is that the problems of white, middle-class women do not universally apply to all of the sisterhood. And until one acknowledges those disparities, we'll never be able to truly eradicate gender inequality. While in present times that may seem glaringly obvious, for much of history, it really wasn't. While bell hooks may have significantly contributed to the feminist movement by constantly fighting for intersectionality and the recognition of the Black female perspective, her work has had its fair share of pushback and criticism. She's received backlash that her work is self-centered and contradicting. One reviewer stated that her writing was too subjective, lacking the ability to provide concrete evidence and relying too heavily on personalized comments. While hooks enjoys theorizing abstractly, I would argue the personal tone of her writing allows for a sense of relatability. One can read how her experiences being raised in segregated Kentucky, as well as the physical abuse she endured at the hands of her father, impacted her theories. It allows for empathy to exist and for individuals like me who are white and privileged to understand the experiences of marginalized women. Subjectivity aside, some people have taken issue with Hooks's own take on intersectionality. Critics say that bell hooks claims to uplift the voices of the disadvantaged, but limits this analysis to the experience of Black women within the developed world. While this is still a pertinent issue, there are women of all races in the developing world that are struggling with issues of imperialism and poverty. These problems make it unarguably difficult to take up the efforts that bell hooks demands in raising female consciousness. These women need even more complex solutions that take into account their status within the developing world. As much as I hate to admit it, this critique actually brings up a pretty good point. Her argument against the centralization of the white middle-class perspective can actually be regurgitated as a critique of her own writing. She prioritizes the concerns of a developed Western society without addressing the impact of gender inequality within third-world countries. Then again, is it really fair to expect one writer to solve an issue as intricate and complicated as gender inequality? Should feminism be promoting solutions that cross borders or that localize around a specific region of the world? Unfortunately, I don't have the answers to these questions, but it's something to think about as we continue to move towards a more equitable future. As our discussion of bell hooks winds down, I wanted to reflect on my own personal thoughts on her writing. One thing I really admire about Hooks is that she doesn't soften her opinions or theories in order to appeal to the masses. As I said, her writing is unforgiving, and women aren't only depicted as victims within her books. She notes that intersectionality has been hard to achieve, partially due to Black women refusing to join the feminist movement, which I've described previously in my podcast. She doesn't let white women off the hook when it comes to misogyny either, never failing to point out that women can also inflict harm and participate in patriarchal culture. This honestly is a refreshing perspective. So often, feminism centers around anti-male rhetoric, which paints men as the only problem and therefore the only solution. While I understand why feminism pushes this narrative, I also believe it's important to recognize that men need to be included within the feminist movement. There needs to be a radical shift, not only in the positioning of women within society, but also of the toxic masculine culture that subjugates them. By holding everyone accountable within her writing, including women of color, white women, men, Hooks creates an environment in which everyone has a part to play when attempting to achieve gender equality. She says she doesn't want a homogenous sisterhood built off of a victim complex, and she really does walk the talk within her writing. This largely resembles François de Graffigny's work, which we discussed in class. Within de Graffigny's writing, Letters of a Peruvian Woman, she too critiques Parisian women who fell into the trap of a misogynistic culture. This culture prioritized female politeness and physical appearance over more substantive qualities, like intelligence or character. In her book, she details how women actually mocked the main character, an Incan princess named Zelia, and actively made her feel unwelcome, rather than supporting her after the traumatic experience of being captured and ripped away from her homeland. She purposefully didn't paint Parisian women as innocent bystanders, but rather extensions of a harmful culture which encouraged judgmental attitudes towards those who didn't fit in. While de Graffigny's work is written from the perspective of a colonized victim, and therefore speaks more to the intricacies of imperialism than Hooks, I believe both mirror this idea of exclusion. The fact that by detailing what a woman is, or what a good feminist is, one simultaneously creates a definition surrounding who isn't a real woman or feminist. In Graffigny's work, this was in reference to Parisian women not accepting Zelia for her Incan roots, while bell hooks focuses around the tense historical relations between white women and women of color. In both instances, you see a community being formed around excluding others rather than accepting diversity, as Hooks details in her book on political sisterhood. It's interesting how past works of female political thinkers somehow still are so relevant today, even with the technological advancements and sociocultural shifts we've seen over the years. It speaks to how ingrained some of these issues are, such as the constant devaluation of Black women, as well as the general indoctrination of women within a harmful patriarchal culture. While there is still so much work to do in achieving true intersectional feminism, bell hooks has unarguably paved the way for women of color to have a place at the table and to be able to partake in the discussion of how to solve gender inequality. Well, that's it for my discussion on bell hooks. I hope you walked away learning something new. I would also really recommend actually reading her writing. While I discussed some of her work, there is still so much I left untouched within this episode. Again, thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it.